This is Randy Wasserstrom with the Triangle Radio Reading Service. Welcome you to our readings from Anne Frank, The Diary of a Young Girl. With me today is Susie Pratt, who will be reading the actual diary entries written by Anne. This show is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. Feel free to call us with any comments or questions about this show or any other subject pertaining to Triangle Radio Reading Service. We're here to serve our listeners, and your input will help us to do a better job. The number is 919-832-5138. Again, that's 919-832-5138. You can also visit our website at www.trianglereadingservice.org. Thanks again for joining us.
It was 1 o'clock by the time Jan left, and we'd done the dishes. All eight of us went to bed. I woke up at 2:45 and saw that Mr. Dussel was already up. My face rumpled with sleep. I happened to run into Peter in the bathroom, just after he'd come downstairs. We agreed to meet in the office. I freshened up a bit and went down. "After all this, do you still dare go to the front attic?" he asked. I nodded, grabbed my pillow, with a cloth wrapped around it, and we went up together. The weather was gorgeous, and even though the air raid sirens soon began to wail, we stayed where we were. Peter put his arm around my shoulder. I put mine around his, and we sat quietly like this until 4 o'clock, when Margot came to get us for coffee. We ate our bread, drank our lemonade, and joked. We were finally able to again, and for the rest, everything was back to normal. That evening, I thanked Peter because he'd been the bravest of all. None of us have ever been in such danger as we were that night. God was truly watching over us. Just think, the police were right at the bookcase. The light was on, and still no one had discovered our hiding place. "Now we're done for," I'd whispered at that moment. But once again we were spared. When the invasion comes and the bombs start falling, it'll be every man for himself. But this time, we feared for those good, innocent Christians who are helping us. "We've been saved. Keep on saving us." That's all we can say. This incident has brought about a whole lot of changes. As of now, Dussel will be doing his work in the bathroom, and Peter will be patrolling the house between 8:30 and 9:30. Peter isn't allowed to open his window anymore, since one of the keg people noticed it was open. We can no longer flush the toilet after 9:30 at night. Mr. Sleegers has been hired as night watchman. And tonight, a carpenter from the underground is coming to make a barricade out of our white Frankfurt bedsteads. Debates are going on left and right in the annex. Mr. Kugler has reproached us for our carelessness. Jan also said we should never go downstairs. What we have to do now is find out whether Sleegers can be trusted, whether the dogs will bark if they hear someone behind the door, how to make the barricade, all sorts of things. We've been strongly reminded of the fact that we're Jews in chains, chained to one spot, without any rights, but with 1,000 obligations. We must put our feelings aside. We must be brave and strong, bear discomfort without complaint, do whatever is in our power and trust in God. One day this terrible war will be over. The time will come when we'll be people again, and not just Jews. Who has inflicted this on us? Who has set us apart from all the rest? Who has put us through such suffering? It's God who has made us the way we are, but it's also God who will lift us up again. In the eyes of the world, we're doomed. But if, after all that suffering, there are still Jews left, the Jewish people will be held up as an example. Who knows? Maybe our religion will teach the world and all the people in it about goodness. And that's the reason, the only reason, we have to suffer. We can never be just Dutch or just English or whatever. We will always be Jews as well. And we'll have to keep on being Jews, but then we'll want to be. Be brave. Let's remember our duty and perform it without complaint. There will be a way out. God has never deserted our people. Through the ages, Jews have had to suffer. But through the ages, they've gone on living. And the centuries of suffering have only made them stronger. The weak shall fall, and the strong shall survive and not be defeated. That night, I really thought I was going to die. I waited for the police, and I was ready for death, like a soldier on a battlefield. I'd gladly have given my life for my country. But now that I've been spared, my first wish after the war is to become a Dutch citizen. I love the Dutch. I love this country. I love the language, and I want to work here. And even if I have to write to the Queen herself, I won't give up until I've reached my goal. I'm becoming more and more independent of my parents. Young as I am, I face life with more courage and have a better and truer sense of justice than mother. I know what I want. I have a goal. I have opinions, a religion, and love. If only I can be myself, I'll be satisfied. I know that I'm a woman with inner strength and a great deal of courage. If God lets me live, I'll achieve more than mother ever did. I'll make my voice heard. I'll go out into the world and work for mankind. I now know that courage and happiness are needed first. Yours, Anne M. Frank. Friday, April 14th, 1944. Dear Kitty, everyone here is still very tense. Pim has nearly reached his boiling point. Mrs. Van Dee is lying in bed with a cold, grumbling. Mr. Van Dee is growing pale without his cigarettes. Dussel, who's having to give up many of his comforts, is carping at everyone, etc., etc. We seem to have run out of luck lately. The toilet's leaking and the faucet's stuck. Thanks to our many connections, we'll soon be able to get these repaired. I'm occasionally sentimental, as you know, but from time to time I have reason to be. When Peter and I are sitting close together on a hard wooden crate among the junk and dust, our arms around each other's shoulders, Peter toying with a lock of my hair. When the birds outside are trilling their songs, when the trees are in bud, when the sun beckons and the sky is so blue. Oh, that's when I wish for so much. All I see around me are dissatisfied and grumpy faces. All I hear are sighs and stifled complaints. You'd think our lives had taken a sudden turn for the worse. Honestly, things are only as bad as you make them. Here in the annex, no one even bothers to set a good example. We each have to figure out how to get the better of our own moods. Every day you hear, "If only it were all over." Work, love, courage, and hope. Make me good and help me cope. I really believe, Kit, that I'm a little nutty today, and I don't know why. My writing's all mixed up. I'm jumping from one thing to another, and sometimes I seriously doubt whether anyone will ever be interested in this drivel. They'll probably call it The Musings of an Ugly Duckling. My diaries certainly won't be of much use to Mr. Bolkestein or Mr. Gerbrandy. Garrett Bolkestein was the Minister of Education, and Peter Gerbrandy was the Prime Minister of the Dutch government in exile in London. See Anne's letter of March 29, 1944. Yours, Anne M. Frank. Saturday, April 15th, 1944. Dearest Kitty, there's just one bad thing after another. When will it all end? You can sure say that again. Guess what's happened now? Peter forgot to unbolt the front door. As a result, Mr. Kugler and the warehouse employees couldn't get in. He went to Kegs, smashed in our office kitchen window, and got in that way. The windows in the annex were open, and the Keg people saw that too. What must they be thinking? And Van Maren? Mr. Kugler's furious. We accuse him of not doing anything to reinforce the doors, and then we do a stupid thing like this. Peter's extremely upset. At the table, Mother said she felt more sorry for Peter than anyone else, and he nearly began to cry. We're equally to blame, since we usually ask him every day if he's unbolted the door, and so does Mr. Van Dan. Maybe I can go comfort him later on. I want to help him so much. Here are the latest news bulletins about life in the secret annex over the last few weeks. A week ago Saturday, Bosch suddenly got sick. He sat quite still and started drooling. Meep immediately picked him up, rolled him in a towel, tucked him in her shopping bag, and brought him to the dog and cat clinic. Bosch had some kind of intestinal problem, so the vet gave him some medicine. Peter gave it to him a few times, but Bosch soon made himself scarce. I'll bet he was out courting his sweetheart. But now, his nose is swollen, and he meows whenever you pick him up. He was probably trying to steal food, and somebody smacked him. Mushi lost her voice for a few days. Just when we decided she had to be taken to the vet, too, she started getting better. We now leave the attic window open a crack every night. Peter and I often sit up there in the evening. Thanks to rubber cement and oil paint, our toilet could be quickly repaired. The broken faucet has been replaced. Luckily, Mr. Kleiman is feeling better. He's going to see a specialist soon. We can only hope he won't need an operation. This month, we received 8 ration books. Unfortunately, for the next 2 weeks, beans have been substituted for oatmeal or groats. Our latest delicacy is pickle-lily. If you're out of luck, all you get is a jar full of cucumber and mustard sauce. Vegetables are hard to come by. There's only lettuce, lettuce, and more lettuce. Our meals consist entirely of potatoes and imitation gravy. The Russians are in possession of more than half the Crimea. The British aren't advancing beyond Cassino. We'll have to count on the Western Wall. There have been a lot of unbelievably heavy air raids. The registry of births, deaths, and marriages in The Hague was bombed. All Dutch people will be issued new ration registration cards. Enough for today. Yours, Anne M. Frank. Sunday, April 16th, 1944. My dearest Kitty, remember yesterday's date, since it was a red-letter day for me. Isn't it an important day for every girl when she gets her first kiss? Well, then it's no less important to me. The time Bram kissed me on the right cheek or Mr. Woodstra on my right hand doesn't count. How did I suddenly come by this kiss? I'll tell you. Last night at 8, I was sitting with Peter on his divan, and it wasn't long before he put an arm around me. Since it was Saturday, he wasn't wearing his overalls. "Why don't we move over a little," I said, "so I won't keep bumping my head against the cupboard." He moved so far over, he was practically in the corner. I slipped my arm under his and across his back, and he put his arm around my shoulder, so that I was nearly engulfed by him. We've sat like this on other occasions, but never so close as we were last night. He held me firmly against him, my left side against his chest. My heart had already begun to beat faster, but there was more to come. He wasn't satisfied until my head lay on his shoulder, with his on top of mine. I sat up again after about 5 minutes, but before long he took my head in his hands and put it back next to his. Oh, it was so wonderful. I could hardly talk. My pleasure was too intense. He caressed my cheek and arm, a bit clumsily, and played with my hair. Most of the time our heads were touching. I can't tell you, Kitty, the feeling that ran through me. I was too happy for words. And I think he was, too. At 9:30, we stood up. Peter put on his tennis shoes so he wouldn't make much noise on his nightly round of the building, and I was standing next to him. How I suddenly made the right movement, I don't know, but before we went downstairs, he gave me a kiss through my hair, half on my left cheek and half on my ear. I tore downstairs without looking back, and I longed so much for today. Sunday morning, just before 11, yours, Anne M. Frank. Monday, April 17th, 1944. Dearest Kitty, do you think father and mother would approve of a girl my age sitting on a divan and kissing a 17-and-a-half-year-old boy? I doubt they would, but I have to trust my own judgment in this matter. It's so peaceful and safe, lying in his arms and dreaming. It's so thrilling to feel his cheek against mine. It's so wonderful to know there's someone waiting for me. But, and there is a but, will Peter want to leave it at that? I haven't forgotten his promise, but he is a boy. I know I'm starting at a very young age, not even 15 and already so independent. That's a little hard for other people to understand. I'm pretty sure Margot would never kiss a boy unless there was some talk of an engagement or marriage. Neither Peter nor I has any such plans. I'm also sure that Mother never touched a man before she met Father. What would my girlfriends or Jackie say if they knew I'd lain in Peter's arms with my heart against his chest, my head on his shoulder, and his head and face against mine? Oh, Anne, how terribly shocking! But seriously, I don't think it's at all shocking. We're cooped up here, cut off from the world, anxious and fearful, especially lately. Why should we stay apart when we love each other? Why shouldn't we kiss each other in times like these? Why should we wait until we've reached a suitable age? Why should we ask anybody's permission? I've decided to look out for my own interests. He'd never want to hurt me or make me unhappy. Why shouldn't I do what my heart tells me and make both of us happy? Yet I have a feeling, Kitty, that you can sense my doubt. It must be my honesty rising in revolt against all the sneaking around. Do you think it's my duty to tell Father what I'm up to? Do you think our secret should be shared with a third person? Much of the beauty would be lost, but would it make me feel better inside? I'll bring it up with him. Oh, yes. I still have so much I want to discuss with him, since I don't see the point of just cuddling. Sharing our thoughts with each other requires a great deal of trust, but we'll both be stronger because of it. Yours, Anne M. Frank. P.S. We were up at 6 yesterday morning because the whole family heard the sound of a break-in again. It must have been one of our neighbors who was the victim this time. When we checked at 7 o'clock, our doors were still shut tight. Thank goodness. Tuesday, April 18th, 1944. Dearest Kitty, everything's fine here. Last night the carpenter came again to put some sheets of iron over the door panels. Father just got through saying he definitely expects large-scale operations in Russia and Italy, as well as in the West, before May 20th. The longer the war lasts, the harder it is to imagine being liberated from this place. Yesterday, Peter and I finally got around to having the talk we've been postponing for the last 10 days. I told him all about girls, without hesitating to discuss the most intimate matters. I found it rather amusing that he thought the opening in a woman's body was simply left out of the illustrations. He couldn't imagine that it was actually located between a woman's legs. The evening ended with a mutual kiss near the mouth. It's really a lovely feeling. I might take my favorite quotes notebook up with me sometime so Peter and I can go more deeply into matters. I don't think lying in each other's arms day in and day out is very satisfying, and I hope he feels the same. After our mild winter, we've been having a beautiful spring. April is glorious, not too hot and not too cold, with occasional light showers. Our chestnut tree is in leaf, and here and there you can already see a few small blossoms. Bet presented us Saturday with 4 bouquets of flowers, 3 bouquets of daffodils, and 1 bouquet of grape hyacinths for me. Mr. Kugler is supplying us with more and more newspapers. It's time to do my algebra, Kitty. Bye. Yours, Anne M. Frank. Wednesday, April 19th, 1944. Dearest Darling. That's the title of a movie with Dorrit Chrysler, Ida West, and Harold Paulson. What could be nicer than sitting before an open window, enjoying nature, listening to the birds sing, feeling the sun on your cheeks, and holding a darling boy in your arms? I feel so peaceful and safe with his arm around me, knowing he's near, and yet not having to speak. How can this be bad when it does me so much good? Oh, if only we were never disturbed again, not even by Mushi. Yours, Anne M. Frank. Friday, April 21st, 1944. My dearest Kitty, I stayed in bed yesterday with a sore throat, but since I was already bored the very first afternoon and didn't have a fever, I got up today. My sore throat has nearly verschwunden, disappeared. Yesterday, as you've probably already discovered, was our Führer's 55th birthday. Today is the 18th birthday of Her Royal Highness Princess Elizabeth of York. The BBC reported that she hasn't yet been declared of age. The royal children usually are. We've been wondering which prince they'll marry this beauty off to, but can't think of a suitable candidate. Perhaps her sister, Princess Margaret Rose, can have Crown Prince Baudouin of Belgium. Here we've been going from one disaster to the next. No sooner have the outside doors been reinforced than Van Maren rears his head again. In all likelihood, he's the one who stole the potato flour, and now he's trying to pin the blame on Bep. Not surprisingly, the annex is once again in an uproar. Bep is beside herself with rage. Perhaps Mr. Kugler will finally have this shady character tailed. The appraiser from Beethovenstraat was here this morning. He offered us 400 guilders for our chest. In our opinion, the other estimates are also too low. I want to ask the magazine The Prince if they'll take one of my fairy tales, under a pseudonym, of course. But up to now, all my fairy tales have been too long, so I don't think I have much of a chance. Until the next time, darling. Yours, Anne M. Frank. Tuesday, April 25th, 1944. Dearest Kitty, for the last 10 days, Dussel hasn't been on speaking terms with Mr. Van Dan, and all because of the new security measures since the break-in. One of these was that he's no longer allowed to go downstairs in the evenings. Peter and Mr. Van Dan make the last round every night at 9:30, and after that no one may go downstairs. We can't flush the toilet anymore after 8 at night or after 8 in the morning. The windows may be opened only in the morning when the lights go on in Mr. Kugler's office, and they can no longer be propped open with a stick at night. This last measure is the reason for Dussel's sulking. He claims that Mr. Van Dan bawled him out, but he has only himself to blame. He says he'd rather live without food than without air, and that they simply must figure out a way to keep the windows open. "I'll have to speak to Mr. Kugler about this," he said to me. I replied that we never discuss matters of this sort with Mr. Kugler, only within the group. "Everything's always happening behind my back. I'll have to talk to your father about that." He's also not allowed to sit in Mr. Kugler's office anymore on Saturday afternoons or Sundays, because the manager of Kegs might hear him if he happens to be next door. Dussel promptly went and sat there anyway. Mr. Van Dam was furious, and Father went downstairs to talk to Dussel, who came up with some flimsy excuse, but even Father didn't fall for it this time. Now Father's keeping his dealings with Dussel to a minimum because Dussel insulted him. Not one of us knows what he said, but it must have been pretty awful. And to think that that miserable man has his birthday next week. How can you celebrate your birthday when you've got the sulks? How can you accept gifts from people you won't even talk to? Mr. Voskuhl is going downhill rapidly. For more than 10 days, he's had a temperature of almost 104. The doctor said his condition is hopeless. They think the cancer has spread to his lungs. The poor man. We'd so like to help him, but only God can help him now. I've written an amusing story called Blurry the Explorer, which was a big hit with my 3 listeners. I still have a bad cold and have passed it on to Margot as well as Mother and Father. If only Peter doesn't get it. He insisted on a kiss and called me his El Dorado. You can't call a person that, silly boy. But he's sweet anyway. Yours, Anne M. Frank. Thursday, April 27th, 1944. Dearest Kitty, Mrs. Van D. was in a bad mood this morning. All she did was complain, first about her cold, not being able to get cough drops, in the agony of having to blow her nose all the time. Next, she grumbled that the sun wasn't shining, the invasion hadn't started, we weren't allowed to look out the windows, etc., etc. We couldn't help but laugh at her, and it couldn't have been that bad, since she soon joined in. Our recipe for potato kugel, modified due to lack of onions. Put peeled potatoes through a food mill and add a little dry government-issue flour and salt. Grease a mold or oven-proof dish with paraffin or stearin and bake for 2.5 hours. Serve with rotten strawberry compote, onions not available, nor oil for mold or dough. At the moment, I'm reading Emperor Charles V, written by a professor at the University of Göttingen. He spent 40 years working on this book. It took me 5 days to read 50 pages. I can't do any more than that. Since the book has 598 pages, you can figure out just how long it's going to take me. And that's not even counting the second volume. But very interesting. The things a schoolgirl has to do in the course of a single day. Take me, for example. First, I translated a passage on Nelson's last battle from Dutch into English. Then, I read more about the Northern War, involving Peter the Great, Charles XII, Augustus the Strong, Stanislaus Leszczynski, Mazeppa, von Gors, Brandenburg, Western Pomerania, Eastern Pomerania, and Denmark, plus the usual dates. Next, I wound up in Brazil, where I read about Bahia tobacco, the abundance of coffee, the 1.5 million inhabitants of Rio de Janeiro, Pernambuco, and Sao Paulo, and last but not least, the Amazon River. Then, about Negroes, mulattoes, mestizos, whites, the illiteracy rate, over 50%, and malaria. Since I had some time left, I glanced through a genealogical chart, John the Old, William Louis, Ernest Casimir I, Henry Casimir I, right up to little Marguerite Francisca, born in 1943 in Ottawa. 12 o'clock. I resumed my studies in the attic, reading about deans, priests, ministers, popes, and, whew, it was 1 o'clock. At 2, the poor child, ho-hum, was back at work. Old World and New World monkeys were next. Kitty, tell me quickly, how many toes does a hippopotamus have? Then came the Bible. Noah's Ark, Shem, Ham, and Japheth. After that, Charles V, then with Peter, Thackeray's book about the colonel, in English, a French test, and then a comparison between the Mississippi and the Missouri. Enough for today. Adieu. Yours, Anne M. Frank. Friday, April 28th, 1944. Dearest Kitty, I've never forgotten my dream of Peter Schiff. See the beginning of January. Even now I can still feel his cheek against mine and that wonderful glow that made up for all the rest. Once in a while, I'd had the same feeling with this Peter, but never so intensely, until last night. We were sitting on the divan, as usual, in each other's arms. Suddenly, the everyday Anne slipped away, and the second Anne took her place. The second Anne, who's never overconfident or amusing, but wants only to love and be gentle. I sat pressed against him and felt a wave of emotion come over me. Tears rushed to my eyes. Those from the left fell on his overalls, while those from the right trickled down my nose and into the air and landed beside the first. Did he notice? He made no movement to show that he had. Did he feel the same way I did? He hardly said a word. Did he realize he had two Anns at his side? My questions went unanswered. At 8:30, I stood up and went to the window where we always say goodbye. I was still trembling. I was still Ann number two. He came over to me, and I threw my arms around his neck and kissed him on his left cheek. I was about to kiss the other cheek when my mouth met his, and we pressed our lips together. In a daze, we embraced over and over again, never to stop. Oh. Peter needs tenderness. For the first time in his life, he's discovered a girl. For the first time, he's seen that even the biggest pests also have an inner self and a heart, and are transformed as soon as they're alone with you. For the first time in his life, he's given himself and his friendship to another person. He's never had a friend before, boy or girl. Now we found each other. I, for that matter, didn't know him either. Had never had someone I could confide in, and it's led to this. The same question keeps nagging me. Is it right? Is it right for me to yield so soon, for me to be so passionate, to be filled with as much passion and desire as Peter? Can I, a girl, allow myself to go that far? There's only one possible answer. I'm longing for so much, and have for such a long time. I'm so lonely, and now I've found comfort. In the mornings, we act normally. In the afternoons, too, except now and then. But in the evenings, the suppressed longing of the entire day, the happiness and the bliss of all the times before come rushing to the surface, and all we can think about is each other. Every night, after our last kiss, I feel like running away and never looking him in the eyes again. Away, far away into the darkness and alone. And what awaits me at the bottom of those 14 stairs? Bright lights, questions, and laughter. I have to act normally and hope they don't notice anything. My heart is still too tender to be able to recover so quickly from a shock like the one I had last night. The gentle Ann makes infrequent appearances, and she's not about to let herself be shoved out the door so soon after she's arrived. Peter's reached a part of me that no one has ever reached before, except in my dream. He's taken hold of me and turned me inside out. Doesn't everyone need a little quiet time to put themselves to rights again? Oh, Peter, what have you done to me? What do you want from me? Where will this lead? Oh, now I understand Bep. Now that I'm going through it myself, I understand her doubts. If I were older and he wanted to marry me, what would my answer be? And be honest. You wouldn't be able to marry him. But it's so hard to let go. Peter still has too little character, too little willpower, too little courage and strength. He's still a child, emotionally no older than I am. All he wants is happiness and peace of mind. Am I really only 14? Am I really just a silly schoolgirl? Am I really so inexperienced in everything? I have more experience than most. I've experienced something almost no one my age ever has. I'm afraid of myself. Afraid my longing is making me yield too soon. How can it ever go right with other boys later on? Oh, it's so hard, the eternal struggle between heart and mind. There's a time and place for both, but how can I be sure that I've chosen the right time? Yours, Anne M. Frank. Tuesday, May 2nd, 1944. Dearest Kitty, Saturday night I asked Peter whether he thinks I should tell Father about us. After we discussed it, he said he thought I should. I was glad. It shows he's sensible and sensitive. As soon as I came downstairs, I went with Father to get some water. While we were on the stairs, I said, Father, I'm sure you've gathered that when Peter and I are together, we don't exactly sit at opposite ends of the room. Do you think that's wrong? Father paused before answering. No, I don't think it's wrong, But Anne, when you're living so close together, as we do, you have to be careful. He said some other words to that effect, and then we went upstairs. Sunday morning, he called me to him and said, Anne, I've been thinking about what you said. Uh-oh, I knew this was coming. Here in the annex, it's not such a good idea. I thought you were just friends. Is Peter in love with you? Of course not, I answered. Well, you know I understand both of you, but you must be the one to show restraint. Don't go upstairs so often. Don't encourage him more than you can help. In matters like these, it's always the man who takes the active role, and it's up to the woman to set the limits. Outside, where you're free, things are quite different. You see other boys and girls, you can go outdoors, take part in sports, and all kinds of activities. But here, if you're together too much and want to get away, you can't. You see each other every hour of the day, all the time, in fact. Be careful, Anne, and don't take it too seriously. I don't, Father. But Peter's a decent boy, a nice boy. Yes, but he doesn't have much strength of character. He can easily be influenced to do good, but also to do bad. I hope for his sake that he stays good, because he's basically a good person. We talked some more and agreed that Father would speak to him, too. Sunday afternoon, when we were in the front attic, Peter asked, Have you talked to your father yet, Anne? Yes, I replied. I'll tell you all about it. He doesn't think it's wrong, but he says that here, where we're in such close quarters, it could lead to conflicts. We've already agreed not to quarrel, and I plan to keep my promise. Me too, Peter. But Father didn't think we were serious. He thought we were just friends. Do you think we still can be? Yes, I do. How about you? Me too. I also told Father that I trust you. I do trust you, Peter, just as much as I do Father, and I think you're worthy of my trust. You are, aren't you? I hope so. He was very shy and blushing. I believe in you, Peter, I continued. I believe you have a good character and that you'll get ahead in this world. After that, we talked about other things. Later, I said, If we ever get out of here, I know you won't give me another thought. He got all fired up. That's not true, Anne. Oh, no. I won't let you even think that about me. Just then, somebody called us. Father did talk to him. He told me Monday. Your father thought our friendship might turn into love, he said, but I told him we'd keep ourselves under control. Father wants me to stop going upstairs so often, but I don't want to. Not just because I like being with Peter, but because I've said I trust him. I do trust him, and I want to prove it to him. But I'll never be able to if I stay downstairs out of distrust. No, I'm going. In the meantime, the Dussel drama has been resolved. Saturday evening at dinner, he apologized in beautiful Dutch. Mr. Van Dan was immediately reconciled. Dussel must have spent all day practicing his speech. Sunday, his birthday, passed without incident. We gave him a bottle of good wine from 1919. The Van Dans, who can now give their gift after all, presented him with a jar of piccalilli and a package of razor blades. And Mr. Kugler gave him a jar of lemon syrup to make lemonade, Meop a book, Little Martin, and Bep a plant. He treated everyone to an egg. Yours, Anne M. Frank. Wednesday, May 3rd, 1944. Dearest Kitty, First, the weekly news. We're having a vacation from politics. There's nothing, and I mean absolutely nothing, to report. I'm also gradually starting to believe that the invasion will come. After all, they can't let the Russians do all the dirty work. Actually, the Russians aren't doing anything at the moment either. Mr. Kleiman comes to the office every morning now. He got a new set of springs for Peter's divan, so Peter will have to get to work reupholstering it. Not surprisingly, he isn't at all in the mood. Mr. Kleiman also brought some flea powder for the cats. Have I told you that our Bosch has disappeared? We haven't seen hide nor hair of her since last Thursday. She's probably already in cat heaven, while some animal lover has turned her into a tasty dish. Perhaps some girl who can afford it will be wearing a cap made of Bosch's fur. Peter is heartbroken. For the last 2 weeks, we've been eating lunch at 11:30 on Saturdays. In the mornings, we have to make do with a cup of hot cereal. Starting tomorrow, it'll be like this every day. That saves us a meal. Vegetables are still very hard to come by. This afternoon, we had rotten boiled lettuce. Ordinary lettuce, spinach, and boiled lettuce. That's all there is. Add to that rotten potatoes, and you have a meal fit for a king. I hadn't had my period for more than 2 months, but it finally started last Sunday. Despite the mess and bother, I'm glad it hasn't deserted me. As you can no doubt imagine, we often say in despair, "What's the point of the war? Why, oh why, can't people live together peacefully? Why all this destruction?" The question is understandable, but up to now no one has come up with a satisfactory answer. Why is England manufacturing bigger and better airplanes and bombs and at the same time churning out new houses for reconstruction? Why are millions spent on the war each day while not a penny is available for medical science, artists, or the poor? Why do people have to starve when mountains of food are rotting away in other parts of the world? Oh, why are people so crazy? I don't believe the war is simply the work of politicians and capitalists. Oh no, the common man is every bit as guilty. Otherwise, people and nations would have rebelled long ago. There's a destructive urge in people, the urge to rage, murder, and kill. And until all that humanity, without exception, undergoes a metamorphosis, wars will continue to be waged, and everything that has been carefully built up, cultivated, and grown will be cut down and destroyed, only to start all over again. I've often been down in the dumps, but never desperate. I look upon our life in hiding as an interesting adventure, full of danger and romance, and every privation as an amusing addition to my diary. I've made up my mind to lead a different life from other girls, not to become an ordinary housewife later on. What I'm experiencing here is a good beginning to an interesting life, and that's the reason, the only reason, why I have to laugh at the humorous side of the most dangerous moments. I'm young and have many hidden qualities. I'm young and strong and living through a big adventure. I'm right in the middle of it, and I can't spend all day complaining because it's impossible to have any fun. I'm blessed with many things: happiness, a cheerful disposition, and strength. Every day I feel myself maturing. I feel liberation drawing near. I feel the beauty of nature and the goodness of the people around me. Every day I think what a fascinating and amusing adventure this is. With all that, why should I despair? Yours, Anne M. Frank. Friday, May 5th, 1944. Dear Kitty, Father's unhappy with me. After our talk on Sunday, he thought I'd stopped going upstairs every evening. He won't have any of that nuschery, necking, going on. I can't stand that word. Talking about it was bad enough. Why does he have to make me feel bad, too? I'll have a word with him today. Margot gave me some good advice. Here's more or less what I'd like to say. I think you expect an explanation from me, Father, so I'll give you one. You're disappointed in me. You expected more restraint from me. You no doubt want me to act the way a 14-year-old is supposed to. But that's where you're wrong. Since we've been here, from July 1942 until a few weeks ago, I haven't had an easy time. If only you knew how much I used to cry at night, how unhappy and despondent I was, how lonely I felt, you'd understand my wanting to go upstairs. I've now reached the point where I don't need the support of Mother or anyone else. It didn't happen overnight. I've struggled long and hard and shed many tears to become as independent as I am now. You can laugh and refuse to believe me, but I don't care. I know I'm an independent person, and I don't feel I need to account to you for my actions. I'm only telling you this because I don't want you to think I'm doing things behind your back. but there's only one person I'm accountable to, and that's me. When I was having problems, everyone, and that includes you, closed their eyes and ears and didn't help me. On the contrary, all I ever got were admonitions not to be so noisy. I was noisy only to keep myself from being miserable all the time. I was overconfident to keep from having to listen to the voice inside me. I've been putting on an act for the last year and a half, day in, day out. I've never complained or dropped my mask, nothing of the kind. And now the battle is over. I've won. I'm independent in both body and mind. I don't need a mother anymore, and I've emerged from the struggle a stronger person. Now that it's over, now that I know the battle has been won, I want to go my own way, to follow the path that seems right to me. Don't think of me as a 14-year-old, since all these troubles have made me older. I won't regret my actions. I'll behave the way I think I should. Gentle persuasion won't keep me from going upstairs. You'll either have to forbid it or trust me through thick and thin. Whatever you do, just leave me alone. Yours, Anne M. Frank. Saturday, May 6, 1944. Dearest Kitty, last night before dinner, I tucked the letter I'd written into Father's pocket. According to Margot, he read it and was upset for the rest of the evening. I was upstairs doing the dishes. Poor Pim. I might have known what the effect of such an epistle would be. He's so sensitive. I immediately told Peter not to ask any questions or say anything more. Pim said nothing else to me about the matter. Is he going to? Everything here is more or less back to normal. We can hardly believe what Jan, Mr. Kugler, and Mr. Kleiman tell us about the prices and the people on the outside. Half a pound of tea costs 350 guilders, half a pound of coffee, 80 guilders, a pound of butter, 35 guilders, one egg, 1.45 guilders. People are paying 14 guilders an ounce for Bulgarian tobacco. Everyone's trading on the black market. Every errand boy has something to offer. The delivery boy from the bakery has supplied us with darning thread, 90 cents for one measly skein. The milkman can get hold of ration books, and undertaker delivers cheese. Break-ins, murders, thefts are daily occurrences. Even the police and night watchmen are getting in on the act. Everyone wants to put food in their stomachs, and since salaries have been frozen, people have had to resort to swindling. The police have their hands full trying to track down the many girls of 15, 16, 17, and older who are reported missing every day. I want to try to finish my story about Ellen, the fairy. Just for fun, I can give it to Father on his birthday, together with all the copyrights. See you later. Actually, that's not the right phrase. In the German program broadcast from England, they always close with Auf Wiederhören. So I guess I should say, until we write again. Yours, Anne M. Frank. Sunday morning, May 7th, 1944. Dearest Kitty, Father and I had a long talk yesterday afternoon. I cried my eyes out, and he cried too. Do you know what he said to me, Kitty? I've received many letters in my lifetime, but none as hurtful as this. You, who have had so much love from your parents, you whose parents have always been ready to help you, who have always defended you no matter what. You talk of not having to account to us for your actions. You feel you've been wronged and left to your own devices. No, Anne, you've done us a great injustice. Perhaps you didn't mean it that way, but that's what you wrote. No, Anne, we have done nothing to deserve such a reproach. Oh, I've failed miserably. This is the worst thing I've ever done in my entire life. I used my tears to show off, to make myself seem important so he'd respect me. I've certainly had my share of unhappiness, and everything I said about Mother is true. But to accuse Pim, who's so good and who's done everything for me? No, that was too cruel for words. It's good that somebody has finally cut me down to size and broken my pride, because I've been far too smug. Not everything Mistress Anne does is good. Anyone who deliberately causes such pain to someone they say they love is despicable. The lowest of the low. What I'm most ashamed of is the way Father has forgiven me. He said he's going to throw the letter in the stove, and he's being so nice to me now, as if he were the one who had done something wrong. Well, Anne, you still have a lot to learn. It's time you made a beginning, instead of looking down at others and always giving them the blame. I've known a lot of sorrow, but who hasn't at my age? I've been putting on an act, but was hardly even aware of it. I've felt lonely, but never desperate. Not like Father, who once ran out into the street with a knife so he could put an end to it all. I've never gone that far. I should be deeply ashamed of myself, and I am. What's done can't be undone, but at least you can keep it from happening again. I'd like to start all over, and that shouldn't be difficult now that I have Peter. With him supporting me, I know I can do it. I'm not alone anymore. He loves me. I love him. I have my books, my writing, and my diary. I'm not all that ugly or that stupid. I have a sunny disposition, and I want to develop a good character. Yes, Anne, you knew full well that your letter was unkind and untrue, but you were actually proud of it. I'll take Father as my example once again, and I will improve myself. Yours, Anne M. Frank. Monday, May 8th, 1944. Dearest Kitty, have I ever told you anything about our family? I don't think I have, so let me begin. Father was born in Frankfurt am Main to very wealthy parents. Michael Frank owned a bank and became a millionaire, and Alice Stern's parents were prominent and well-to-do. Michael Frank didn't start out rich. He was a self-made man. In his youth, Father led the life of a rich man's son. Parties every week, balls, banquets, beautiful girls, waltzing, dinners, a huge house, etc. After Grandpa died, most of the money was lost, and after the Great War and inflation, there was nothing left at all. Up until the war, there were still quite a few rich relatives, so Father was extremely well-bred, and he had to laugh yesterday because for the first time in his 55 years, he scraped out the frying pan at the table. Mother's family wasn't as wealthy, but still fairly well off, and we've listened open-mouthed to stories of private balls, dinners, and engagement parties with 250 guests. We're far from rich now, but I've pinned all my hopes on after the war. I can assure you, I'm not so set on a bourgeois life as Mother and Margot. I'd like to spend a year in Paris and London learning the languages and studying art history. Compare that with Margot, who wants to nurse newborns in Palestine. I still have visions of gorgeous dresses and fascinating people. As I've told you many times before, I want to see the world and do all kinds of exciting things, and a little money won't hurt. This morning, Miep told us about her cousin's engagement party, which she went to on Saturday. The cousin's parents are rich, and the grooms are even richer. Miep made our mouths water telling us about the food that was served. Vegetable soup with meatballs, cheese, rolls with sliced meat, hors d'oeuvres made with eggs and roast beef, rolls with cheese, genoise, wine and cigarettes, and you could eat as much as you wanted. Miep drank 10 schnapps and smoked 3 cigarettes. Could this be our temperance advocate? If Miep drank all those, I wonder how many her spouse managed to toss down. Everyone at the party was a little tipsy, of course. There were also 2 officers from the homicide squad who took photographs of the wedding couple. You can see we're never far from Miep's thought, since she promptly noted their names and addresses in case anything should happen and we needed contacts with good Dutch people. Our mouths were watering so much. We, who'd had nothing but 2 spoonfuls of hot cereal for breakfast and were absolutely famished. We, who get nothing but half-cooked spinach for the vitamins and rotten potatoes day after day. We, who fill our empty stomachs with nothing but boiled lettuce, raw lettuce, spinach, and more spinach. Maybe we'll end up being as strong as Popeye. Though up to now, I've seen no sign of it. If Miep had taken us along to the party, there wouldn't have been any rolls left over for the other guests. If we'd been there, we'd have snatched up everything in sight, including the furniture. I tell you, we were practically pulling the words right out of her mouth. We were gathered around her as if we'd never in all our lives heard of delicious food or elegant people. And these are the granddaughters of the distinguished millionaire. The world is a crazy place. Yours, Anne M. Frank. Tuesday, May 9th, 1944. Dearest Kitty, I've finished my story about Ellen, the fairy. I've copied it out on nice notepaper, decorated it with red ink, and sewn the pages together. The whole thing looks quite pretty, but I don't know if it's enough of a birthday present. Margot and Mother have both written poems. Mr. Kugler came upstairs this afternoon with the news that starting Monday, Mrs. Brox would like to spend 2 hours in the office every afternoon. Just imagine! The office staff won't be able to come upstairs. The potatoes can't be delivered. Bep won't get her dinner. We can't go to the bathroom. We won't be able to move. And all sorts of other inconveniences. We proposed a variety of ways to get rid of her. Mr. Van Dam thought a good laxative in her coffee might do the trick. No, Mr. Kleiman answered. Please don't, or we'll never get her off the can. A roar of laughter. The can, Mrs. Van D asked? What does that mean? An explanation was given. Is it all right to use that word? She asked in perfect innocence. Just imagine, Bep giggled. There you are shopping at the Bijenkorf, and you ask the way to the can. They wouldn't even know what you were talking about. Dussel now sits on the can, to borrow the expression, every day at 12:30 on the dot. This afternoon, I boldly took a piece of pink paper and wrote, Mr. Dussel's toilet timetable. Mornings, from 7:15 to 7:30 a.m. Afternoons, after 1 p.m., otherwise only as needed. I tacked this to the green bathroom door while he was still inside. I might well have added, transgressors will be subject to confinement, because our bathroom can be locked from both the inside and the outside. Mr. Van Dan's latest joke. After a Bible lesson about Adam and Eve, a 13-year-old boy asked his father, Tell me, father, how did I get born? Well, the father replied, the stork plucked you out of the ocean, set you down in mother's bed, and bit her in the leg hard. It bled so much she had to stay in bed for a week. Not fully satisfied, the boy went to his mother. Tell me, mother, he asked, how did you get born and how did I get born? His mother told him the very same story. Finally, hoping to hear the fine points, he went to his grandfather. Tell me, grandfather, he said, how did you get born and how did your daughter get born? And for the third time, he was told exactly the same story. That night, he wrote in his diary, After careful inquiry, I must conclude that there has been no sexual intercourse in our family for the last 3 generations. I still have work to do. It's already 3 o'clock. Yours, Anne M. Frank. P.S. Since I think I've mentioned the new cleaning lady, I just want to note that she's married, 60 years old, and hard of hearing. Very convenient in view of all the noise that 8 people in hiding are capable of making. Oh, Kit, it's such lovely weather. If only I could go outside.
That's all the time we have for today's readings from Anne Frank, The Diary of a Young Girl. Join us at the same time next week. Thanks again for listening. If you know someone who could benefit from our service, point them our direction. If you know someone who would like to contribute in any way, point them in our direction. You can call us at 919-832-5138 or visit our website at trianglereadingservice.org. Once again, I'm Randy Wasserstrom. From Susie, from me, and everyone here at TRRS, have a nice rest of the day.
Thank you.